time opening. We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
And welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie for Spike Jonze's latest foray into filmdom with his futuristic sci-fi rom-com drama, Her, I guess is how we can tell it.
Just put all the genres all in one, and then you've got it.
I'm joined on the panel by Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Sarah Stretton.
Hi, guys.
Dimitri Panos.
Hi.
And helming the booth is our very own Phil Svitek.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, I interrupted you right off the bat, so go ahead and do what you
were
going to say.
About the only thing you can't say about this movie is it's a crime drama.
But you That's could true. Say it could be in some people's lives a horror.
Yes.
Like, the horror of the future.
So we're already jumping in. So let's continue with the overall impressions. Marissa.
I liked it, and I loved how the possibility of singularity, the artificial intelligence becoming as human and maybe even so better than human. And I loved how this is like a future glimpse of what could possibly happen.
I think that this movie was just so unexpected. From the trailers and from the marketing, or the original marketing, I think since it's had its wide release, they've kind of changed their approach. Yeah. But from the original trailer, I thought that this movie was going to be a joke. It was going to be something that I was going to be able to like make fun of and not really connect to. And then I saw it, and I thought it was handled and made in such a great way that it did make it believable. It did make it relatable. And although it is a science fiction movie, I felt like it was still in a world that was in within reach, mm-hmm. and something that wasn't so far-fetched. It was very, I thought that there was a lot of commentary about like our society today, and on top of that, it was just a good film and a good story. So I'm a big fan.
Nice.
And I definitely think that it should win a couple things in Oscar nominations.
Which we will get to in time. Dimitri.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this movie a lot. I mean, I would never, I don't think, I think a Spike Jonze movie to me, I would just take seriously. I would never fluff it off as a joke. What's unexpected
unless
is
it's Jackass.
That's true, but you know, he's not directing, but you know, and good for him for doing that too. Bad Grandpa also up for an Academy. But in any case, no, I mean, I think this movie, it was unexpected for me because I saw it after some of the hype and some of the awards that it had won.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, what the production design? Like, there's nothing in the trailer that even hints that this movie's, you know, and, you know, after watching it, you know, you have a better realization. For me, I really did like the science fiction aspect of the movie and how it's relatable. And I've said this before that good science fiction is always, it's for it to be good, it has to be deeply rooted into the human condition, and it has to be relatable. It should be relatable in one way, shape, or form, whether it's an outlandish future or whatever. There's something that should be familiar, and that's what makes good science fiction. And in this movie, while it is the not too distant future, it is very recognizable. Like, there are things that there are tropes in this movie, and that even the technology isn't so out of hand that we can, you know, I was able to buy into it. Now, there were some things, and we can talk about it later, that where this movie goes, there are other things going wild. Things can go horribly wrong with this artificial intelligence. But I liked that Spike Jonze kept it warm, and he made it somewhat intimate, and he made this nice, warm drama, so to speak, within the science fiction setting. So, yeah, I liked it a lot.
Great. And moving on to Phil.
Baudrillard's simulacrum and simulations has certainly was evident in this movie. The decay of meaning at its fullest.
Are you reading this off something, Phil?
No, I am not.
That's the philosophy.
Plagiarism. Plagiarism, Sarah. What? Wow. I'm not smart enough to have actual thoughts and opinions? No. Okay. Typically, right, you get one, let's say, one love letter in a movie or something like that, and it's the epitome, it's the climax, and things like that. How many just love letters off the bat you got in this? What is it called? The rep, when repetition, after you repeat something so many times it loses kind of value.
Yeah.
And so it's just
diminishing return. Is
that that's right? The law of diminishing return. Exactly. And so he's just churning out all these love letters, and obviously he's trying to relate to them, but by churning them out so many times, he doesn't even know what really love is until, you know, he finds her. And it's just frightening, to be honest.
It's frightening. Okay. Interesting. It's frightening. Well, I enjoyed the movie. I have to say, as I was watching it, I was surprised by it because, you know, just when you think, just when I thought it was going somewhere, it would take a little turn to the mm-hmm. left or to the right. It's like, oh, not unexpected. So that was nice. But the more I've thought about it, and this has been a movie that I've thought about more mm-hmm. so than a lot of the other movies that are out
sure.
this year. This one stayed with me. And I'm still thinking about it, and for good reasons and bad reasons, which we'll get into. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I should say that other people should see it. So, but let's get into the details of it. So, what do we know about how this thing became a movie? We know it took many years to put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently the genesis was around a decade ago.
Yeah,
with Spike Jones actually coming across a quote unquote artificial intelligence type computer mm-hmm. program. And he's like, "Wow, this is neat. Let me try this out." And he was actually interacting with it mm-hmm. and is having a good time. But 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. He realized the quote unquote trick of it all.
Yeah.
But he thought, wow, what if this artificial intelligence grew?
Extrapolate this out.
And he started a script. So, you know, it is interesting that technology from 10 years ago could spark something that is not too distant future. But at the same time, today when we look at our technology, and I think that's what makes this movie relevant for today, is that, again, it's so accessible, but it was stemmed from something that happened 10 years ago, you know, and the technology wasn't what it is today.
Clearly.
And also about accessibility, it's also more socially acceptable nowadays.
Sure.
And now it's becoming a second nature thing, and everyone is okay with it and allows it to happen.
Yeah, just even from that. Sorry, Sarah. You'll
it's
get
okay. You guys are all on the same topic, and I'm like going to another one. So go ahead.
Well, just continue. You know, I mean, just think about 10 years ago, right? There was the whole debate about, you know, when you're on your cell phone, how loud can you be? And the fact, yeah. you know, we open up the movie, and it's just like next, and everyone's kind of off in their own little world. Yeah. And you know, today that's not, not familiar. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas 10 years ago, it would have been like, what are you doing? Why are you talking?
Yeah, I was going to say, just like, well, on your point about the technology and where that is and how it so far can come in 10 years, it's like, although this is set in some
the
whatever
unspecified
future.
Thank
you. Like, these technologies are very much yeah. present, mm-hmm. and although they're not readily available or integrated into the public, mm-hmm. they have been acknowledged of their, like, existence, whether it be, like, the screens that mm-hmm. don't actually, you need a keyboard, mm-hmm. or it's interactive, right. There's voice commands, it's not... Just it's about connecting with technology mm-hmm. through thought and through voice, from Google Glasses to everything else. Mm-hmm. It makes this seem very realistic and very, very possible in this movie. Mm-hmm. So it was really, you have to say good job, Spike Jonze, for just hitting right. the nail on the head early and being able to.
But it's not that far of a jump. I mean, how many people have, quote, mm-hmm. fallen in love online, as they think? So they're doing it with ostensibly mm-hmm. an operating system, but it's just another person on the other end.
Sure.
You don't meet, mm-hmm. and, you know, you'll travel thousands of miles and then meet them later. But it's just that much of a little leap.
Exactly.
Because we've been doing it like crazy.
And that's the fun commentary. It's like why this film is good on so many levels is because it does have that underlying tone mm. of, you know, what is technology doing to us? Mm. How are relationships really functioning mm. now? But on top of that, you do get just an entertaining love story. Mm-hmm. So I like films that have a deeper meaning, but that's not all it's about. You can still just enjoy them for what they are if you don't want to, like, go to that next level of them.
Yeah, when you talk technology, too, to me, there's always, you know, with the earbuds and talking, there's a fine line between crazy and I'm just talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're walking down the street and you see people talking to each other, even if you're driving and people are, like, in this angry, you know, and then you're like, oh, my God, they're talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, well, are you talking to me?
Yeah,
no, they're so talking to their, you know, Bose little Bluetooth.
I don't know about you guys, but every once in a while I see somebody talking and it still kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
They're just talking to no one and then it takes me a second. Maybe everybody else is used to it. But, I mean, there was a – in the bathroom at a urinal, the guy's talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But it's still, but in this movie, everybody's, it's just the way it is. And everybody's normal. Fine with it. And, you know.
It's but part, you can see it happening. Which
yeah.
Is the
it's their
part.
Whole lifestyle. And you see them when they're commuting to work, they're mm-hmm. doing it. When they're at work, they're doing it. And when they're even at home, when they're not working, they're mm-hmm. still communicating through technology. Yeah.
And I just, again, I'll go back. I find it interesting that the genesis of this or the spark took place 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Where, this wasn't really happening. So, you know, I'm sure that the script went through his revisions as
absolutely,
technology
yeah.
was getting, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. More complex mm-hmm. and more accessible. Mm-hmm. But still, to think about that and to write it, you know. But again, I will go and say, and, you know, we can, I don't know if we're going to segue into this, but the in science fiction alone, the history of technology, man and technology and the coupling,
yeah.
it's through television, through cinematic, it's gone, it goes way back.
Yeah.
So,
and usually science fiction is pushing technology.
Usually pushing.
Forecasting.
And it
could
be good or bad.
Exactly.
So, you know, but there is...
they're feeding each other a lot.
Yeah, too, well, so. They do. And again, it's an original screenplay, but, you know, the concept has been around. There have been Twilight episodes, in fact. Mm-hmm. Thanks to a good friend of mine, Craig, who did some research, helped me with some research, but there was a great Twilight episode called, From Agnes with Love. And basically it opens up with a man trying to get love advice from a computer mm-hmm. and the computer falls in love with the man.
Interesting.
So.
This is a, would you say it was a Twilight Zone?
This was a Twilight Zone episode.
Do you happen to know?
I don't, you know, back? But okay. This was back. It was a half hour episode. It's not one of the more known episodes, yeah. but it's From Agnes with Love. Wow. So, you know, and. Look at what her's about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then I got to go, you know, I always have to, I always find some way to push in Star Trek, but there was always, there has always been technology, man, sure. and the relationship from cinematically, from the motion picture where that movie ends with a human male who makes the choice to, in a sense, mate with a woman who he had had a relationship with. She had been assimilated to this new form, but he mates with her and a star child is born, but he makes the decision to do that conscious decision. And, you know, throughout Next Generation, there was a great episode called In Theory, in which Lieutenant Commander Data, who's an android, a self-aware android, and he develops a relationship, or a woman develops a relationship with him. She's a crew woman. She was in a bad breakup. Data is there. He sort of consoles her, and she begins to develop feelings with this android who can't emote human
transference.
Feelings. Transference. But the episode is about how does Data deal with this?
Sure.
And at the end, it's sort of bittersweet because she gets over her past relationship. She realizes that Data can't emotionally provide. She finds a new boyfriend and they break up, and you know, for Data, you know, what should have been a sad moment, Data's like, okay, he's sort of like, okay, I'll see you around the ship, you know, and he can't give that emotion wow. back. And then for me, one of the granddaddies of them all cinematically is the 1982 Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner pits man with machine, man versus machine, and in that movie you have what are called replicants which are yeah. self-aware androids. I won't go into the philosophies of whether or not Rick Deckard is human or replicant. For this conversation, he's going to be human. And, you know, but you had replicants they had their relationships.
Sure.
There were two, Roy Batty and Pris. You could tell that there was a tender, loving, kind, caring relationship between them. And then at the end, it's human and Rachel, who is the special replicant. Mm-hmm. That they go off together. And the one of the last lines is, you know, I didn't know how much long she had to live, but right. who does? And right. they go off into the
so
wilderness.
So then for
and,
you, it was primarily a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people that haven't even seen the sci-fi aspect of it and take it totally as a rom-com.
You could. And,
yeah.
and that's a good argument. And it could work, yeah. you know, if you place your arguments right. But mm-hmm. science fiction, I think, and this is why I think this works, because it can play, good science fiction can play to a mass market. People will get it. They understand. And if you break it down that way, and in fact, I'll even go a step further. Her makes a direct, I don't know if it was intentional, but for me, it made a direct reference to Blade Runner. When he turns on, okay, in Blade Runner, the movie the first time you see two characters speaking, it is a cop. He's a Blade Runner and he's interviewing somebody. He's giving them a Voight-Kampff test, which is the test to see if whether a human is not a human. Mm-hmm. And the final question he says is, so Leon, tell me your feelings about your mother. Mm-hmm. And Leon's like, you want to know about my mother? And then he shoots him. And her, when he turns on the OS system, it asks him questions. And the very final question to him is, tell me about your relationship with your mother. And I was like, oh, that's almost like right out of Blade Runner. And then it goes right into Samantha. So I love that.
Did you guys look at it as a sci-fi, or how did you just take it as it was, or did you?
I didn't really try to put it in a genre until afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think it definitely does have sci-fi elements just because it does deal with this future. So that automatically kind of is a qualification. But it's a romance. It's a romantic drama, comedy. I mean, I think it can kind of be grouped into all of them. To me, it doesn't just stick as a sci-fi, just stick as a romantic comedy. You just have to kind of combine it. That's why I think that it's such a good screenplay and such a good original work, because it does kind of blur all the lines between them and just make a good movie.
But science fiction, though, to note, is, like I said, good science fiction always reflects humanity of today in one way, shape, or form. Whether it's a Planet of the Apes or something like that, you can take from it what's going on. And so science fiction can be about romance. Mm-hmm. It can be a good romantic theme and setting and about relationships. And I think that's where it works very well, because you could look at it as a relationship movie.
I saw it as more of a romance, and because the whole theme of this movie, it wasn't really comedic in any way. It was more melancholy, more soft and slow in that sense. But thematically, it was more about the human connection, from human connection to another human, from a OS system to a human, just the need for any human personification connection in that way, and that's what I took out of the movie.
Phil, your thoughts?
Whether it's
when you thought of it, where how'd you classify it?
For me, it was more of a romantic comedy, or you know, drama. I mean, obviously it took the ideas of technology and where we're headed, but it was more about love and isolation, and how we really interact with people, and how, you know, I think it was Thoreau who said, you know, telephones now can kind of connect us all, but do I really need to call Denver? And so, you know, you have all these things that you can interact with, and yet we're blind to it, right? I mean, eventually he finally sees Amy Adams' character and he's able to connect with her. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, despite having the city of people, he's just in such almost depressing solitude.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, and I think the word we've used it here already.
Way to drop the row, by the way.
I like that. That's good. Impressed. No, but I think the one key word that I think we've all mentioned is connectivity, or connect, in one way, shape, or form. And I think it is connecting with someone else. I think it's connecting back with himself again. I think that's a major theme of finding love. You know, Spike Jonze, taken from an interview that he did with the Salt Lake Tribune, he was asked specifically about technology and connection. And, you know, he replied, I think technology is doing so many things to us. It's helping us connect and preventing us from connecting.
That's what I think.
And he goes, and I think that's the setting for this movie. Yeah. And I think that one quote really does set up her. It is about connecting and technology. Today we see it all the time, and it's always talked about in the news about how disconnected are we becoming from people, where we're not, when it's gotten to the point where
you can reach someone across the globe in 1 second, but you can't talk to the person
across the room because you're on your cell.
Yeah, but even if you're doing that, reaching the person, you're still, people are less and less picking up a phone now, you know, to point to the Thoreau quote. Yeah. It's like they would rather just use their thumbs. And I'm like, that's too hard sometimes. I'd rather just hit the call button. And I'd rather talk to a person. But I think connectivity in this movie is really.
I think another theme, this is a Bukowski poem, but I think if there's no,
damn,
if there's one central idea, I think it could be this. There are worse things than being alone, but it often takes decades to realize this. And most often when you do, it's too late, and there's nothing worse than too late.
Wow.
And I think, you know, he's contemplating, you know, he's obviously just had his breakup. And he's trying, he's not he wants a connection because obviously writing all these poems, or, you know, letters more so, he wants to feel that way, but he's not ready to actively pursue that. And so, you know, with the invention of the OS, it's passively, you know, put on to him. Unlike with the woman that he was set up with, he had to actually go there and try. Whereas with this, it fits his needs and his lifestyle and whatever else.
I like this. We're really digging deep, but they're all thematically tied. And I think what really, for me, what made her work, and I think what makes it work, this movie could have gone a different way. Like, you have to buy into the concept to really enjoy the movie.
Of course.
And if the concept was so ludicrous, then I don't think we'd be talking about it right now. And I think the setup was key. And the setup was a recently, it didn't seem like an easy divorce.
Well, yeah, and he's still not divorced. I mean, he's still trying to hang on to whatever it was there.
And you have a man who had fallen in love, greatly in love, and it was ripped away, and he's alone. And when I don't want to speak for everybody, but perhaps we've all had a similar situation. There's been a bad breakup or whatnot. I had gone through a divorce, and there's a time or a point in your life where you think and you're trying to connect to somebody, and it's very difficult. And he's just looking for that spark, and that's what you're looking for, that spark to maybe open up the heart again. And you're finding somebody who can do that. And so it makes it, for me, it made it real that the OS or Samantha gave him what he needed to just try to open up again, because he, through all that, he did find his humanity. He found himself when it was lost. And to me, that, again, another great theme within the movie.
See, I think what really made, because I think you're right, the nail on the head is, if this movie works for you, you have to believe it. You have to believe that it's possible. And how they made me believe that it's possible was through the other relationships. So when Amy Adams developed a friendship with her OS, and you got to see it expand, and you got to see that it wasn't just happening to his character,
right,
then it made me more accepting of the fact that this could happen. Mm-hmm. Because we do get that he is in a low place, that he's feeling melancholy, that he's kind of a loner at the moment who's searching for something. But the other people in the society were also developing these relationships, and it was kind of becoming a common practice, and that you could see how they were interacting on these different levels. And even when his ex-wife almost got mad about it. And
I wouldn't say almost.
I don't know if it was mad or like jealousy or whatever. Yeah. But
that's right. Could have been.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's like, is it jealous? Who knows?
Yeah.
But all those different layers and all the other human relationships that were happening and feeding off of his relationship with his OS, that's what made it work for me. Because it wasn't just isolated between him and her in this one room all the time. It was really connecting their relationship with his outside connections and seeing
that's great. I didn't see that going in. I mean, I love that you made that connection, because I was thinking, the reason why it was plausible for me is the reason why I said earlier, there's so many people online that don't know each other, that are meeting online, that still don't know each other, but they're saying they're falling in love with each other.
Phenomenon.
They're doing it. They're all that. Exactly. And so I go, okay, yeah, that's not that big of a jump. But the fact that everybody else starts doing it, then that kind of this scared me a little bit. I felt a little sad for everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody's so desperate and so isolated. We have such great connectivity, but not able to connect. And I just thought the irony of that was amazing. And that freaks me out that you said that now.
Because it became like, if it was just one man who was connecting with his OS and he was already in a sad place, then you can just make an excuse that that's why it's happening. Mm-hmm. But when he related to all these other characters who
seem happy seeing everybody,
and who want these other relationships and who are okay with like people they work with or friends of theirs having these relationships, and they're quote unquote normal, then it makes the whole thing normal. And that's what made it believable to me.
Yeah. But again, too, go back to Amy Adams. The only reason why she started this relationship with her OS is because she was going through a bad breakup with her husband.
That's true.
You had to have been put into a place where that kind of a relationship was going to be acceptable. It wasn't like people were necessarily choosing. Like, there was something going on
so
in their lives.
The lesser of whatever?
Yeah, so I think, well, I think that this was, you know, it's easy.
Absolutely.
And
it's much safer, let's face it. It's much safer to relate with your OS than actually.
Is it? Because he seemed to get just as heartbroken.
Yeah, but not in the beginning. In the beginning, it's safer because it's just an OS.
It's just an OS.
It's you only know when she evolves that it starts, because now there's a being, so to speak, on the other side. There's an intelligence on there.
Right.
But it's much easier to be in a relationship with somebody that's going to do your... sorting of your email and is there for your every whim, until all of a sudden she starts to develop some autonomy.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, then it gets a little risky.
And then she disappears offline.
There.
And like, then you don't know what you're going
control
to do.
You?
Well, see, and that's the part that scared me. And it wasn't, and this is a place, this is a way that this movie could have gone. When she disappears offline, like, I was thinking, oh, geez, hell hath no fury as an OS scorned, because do you want to piss off your OS? I mean, that's got your life. And if all I kept
all
on thinking was
stuff is out there.
It's Skynet, and I'm thinking the end of humanity is coming. Like Skynet. When these people
Samantha Net.
Well, I mean, nothing was broached in the movie like when all those OSs decided to just disappear, go away.
Yeah.
Like, Apple stock would have dropped, our society would have been put in a like everything would have just stopped working. So it didn't go down that way, but these are the things that I think of, like, Jesus, I wouldn't want to piss off my computer, because like it's sort of kind of like not wanting to necessarily date somebody at work. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to be put in that uncomfortable situation.
Well, can you just plug that- it? Yeah. Get a different OS.
But that also goes to show that the
power.
The OS wasn't truly connected to him either, because Samantha didn't call Theodore to say, hey, I'm going offline. She sent an email.
Yeah.
So like, there's even a disconnect between the two there. Mm-hmm. As much as we think that they're connected, they really weren't.
Yeah. And, and I think that futuristic LA was a hell of a lot more accepting. Like, if somebody today said, oh, I'm having a relationship with my OS, I mean, he went out on a weekend getaway to Catalina with those couple, and they were like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah, well, that's part of what you were saying.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. Yeah. That's what made it feel real to me, but that's also why it's sci-fi, because it's this whole other world. If we're not there yet, obviously, I walked in and was like, guys, Siri's my new best friend, for real.
But I was waiting for the one person besides the wife, who kind of, former wife, I should say, who has a bit of an agenda. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there anybody to go,
problem?
This is,
well,
this,
I mean,
is a
he
bit
does question
odd.
Himself.
He does, but
he does question himself.
But there wasn't enough of that for me. I was like, isn't there a rational person going, do you see where this is headed at all, buddy?
Right.
I mean, I know he's isolated, but there, it seemed like that could have been brought up, because at that,
I was okay with it just being brought up once, maybe because I felt very supported by like the supporting characters. I really enjoyed the actors and the scenes that they had. But we don't know. There was so much material that was in this movie before it was edited. I mean, just
first
edit
was 150 minutes or something.
And it went down to 90. Yeah. And that's on top of everything that didn't get filmed, didn't get changed, that he edited out himself before even showing that cut. Like, I know that one of the things they had mentioned was that I think it was the first filmings, they had a possibility of showing a back of a woman's head at certain points going in and out of frame. And it was supposed to be Joaquin Phoenix's kind of thinking about that ungraspable attaining of seeing Samantha's face.
I see.
But they had like this woman who was like, you would sometimes see the back of her head like fading
out.
And
he might think that might be unattainable Samantha.
That's actually a photograph. Mm-hmm. It's an actual photograph that Spike Jones has in his office.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a picture of a woman by a tree, but all you see is her back, and it's the mystery of what it is. And in fact, he was writing post-it notes, putting it up there, trying to figure up like a quotation to put with it, and then he finally came up with her. Her was like perfect, and he kept it up there. So I understand, but I'm glad they didn't add that type of like giving the artificial intelligence a physicality. It works better in the mind. I thought one of the better scenes in the movie that really worked was the sex scene, let's call it, that just went to dark. And you left it to the imagination, which is what it was. And, to me, again, you buy into what's going on. very much to what you were saying earlier about, you know, we have these relationships with sometimes people we don't know, or long distance relationships or whatnot. So what do you do in those situations? But I thought, to me, one of the most uncomfortable scenes in the movie is when they brought in the surrogate, the human.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think if you had brought in the human element like that, that would have really been uncomfortable, because look what happened when they did try that. And I felt, I guess, in a sense, like Joaquin,
sad for everybody.
Right.
I was just, same like, oh my here. God, this is pitiful. Oh. It seemed pathetic.
Yeah.
And this is where I go, this is his not too distant future, or whatever, unspecified future. And, you know, I know it's not a dystopian landscape, but I was still going, that's pretty dystopian, dude. Because nobody can connect, and they're so desperate that this is what the level, the lengths they're going to.
Right.
And I'm going, please, just put everything down and just talk to somebody.
I know.
But luckily, you kind of get that release at the end. Mm-hmm. If that's what's building up for you the whole movie, you're just like, what's happening? You do get human connection, which is good.
Phil, get any great quotes?
No.
I'm spent for now.
You don't feel that glimmer of hope?
No, I absolutely did, of course. And I'm just going, I was saddened that this, and I'm going to say, rather than extrapolate this to the whole society, I'm going to say this poor schmuck, and I thought he was just a sad sack of a guy. It took you that long to really just sit there and talk to somebody? I mean, come on. What the hell? I wanted to slap the boy upside the head and say, not just but here's, snap okay, out of it.
You know what? Actually, I'm two things.
Hold up.
Hold the press. I think by far, pathetic as Joaquin Phoenix's character was, and he really towed that line of likability and whatnot. But his coworker, right, the receptionist,
right,
when he hovers over his shoulder and says, "That's beautiful. I wish a girl wrote that to me." I mean, through you, of course, but you know, the girl,
right?
And it's like, what? Do you understand that?
I know
that there's no real emotion put into it. You know, you've just. And so you're building up these relationships that are based on nothing.
Exactly.
Really.
And that was the other thing that I felt horrible about, is that, are you kidding me?
But
people
isn't that
have to
such
go
a good
to somebody.
Point? Like, isn't that such a good point in the film? Like, yeah,
it's an amazing point.
Exactly. It's
because
like, it doesn't make you happy, but it makes you think. And it makes you, like, but I don't know, take that message into your own mind.
There is the point where Catherine, his ex, soon to be ex wife, did when they sat down. She felt bad for Theodore. She says the line, The fact that you can't handle real emotions, and then when they added the surrogate in there, that was the closest thing that he was going to get to real human connection, and he couldn't handle it.
I don't think he wanted to handle it. I think he was comfortable where he was, and adding in that element really just it was a very sad situation, but it was also like he didn't necessarily want it. The AI was the one that was pushing him, saying, this is important for me. Like, I want this. And he's like, I don't know.
Sarah's jumping. Go ahead, Sarah. No.
I did want to just bring up something that Phil was talking about. He's a wordsmith. And I think that within inside him, he did have those emotions. I think he really did. There was a great line that Amy Adams, inviting him to a party. And it basically said something like, we want the old happy Theodore, not the sad Theodore, you know, come out to this party. And I think as his progression went along, we got to see what happy Theodore was like. He was dancing, he was running around on the beach, doing all the things at the carnival. And that was the Theodore pre-divorce.
He couldn't, at the same time, as great as he is a wordsmith, he never really said it to anybody besides her.
Samantha, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's who he ultimately felt comfortable with. He wasn't being judged, right? He even says, you know, I feel like I can tell you anything and whatnot. And for my money's worth, all these people, they're just walking around almost zombie-like, you know? And I think it's no coincidence that particularly right now we're seeing so much zombie things, because in a way we are zombie-like, and we just default to our natural human settings of it's all about me, and we could care less about anybody else unless it ties back directly to us.
Okay.
This is now off topic.
Jump in.
But what I was going to say is, you were bringing up the surrogate and the lack of emotional connection, this character feelings, and while that was, I agree, a pathetic situation, I think that in the context of the film, that was a very typical state of relationships.
Yeah, I'm not
and I'm not that. Saying that just specifically between the iOS and him. I think that also if you look at the sexual relationships he's having at the beginning mm-hmm. with real people, but it's just on the phone mm-hmm. and you have that like crazy woman who like gets off to something he is not connected to at all.
I'm going to say it.
What
strangle me with a dead cat.
What, yeah, what are you talking about, Sarah? Sarah, why don't you say but, it slow? Say
no,
it slow.
Not
say it. You're
no.
dirty.
But the thing is, like, that's just as pathetic. That's just as disconnected.
Absolutely.
It feels like, so I think that it's just an overlying theme and point that as much as we want to point the blame on, oh, you can't have a real relationship with an iOS because look at how awkward this is. Look at how awkward all of your relationships are.
I thought it was perfectly appropriate for the movie. Exactly. Absolutely. I'm just stepping out of it, looking at it, mm-hmm. not being, because when I was watching the movie, I enjoyed all of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, that's why I said mm-hmm. it stuck with me. As I step back and I look at it, I go, oh my God, that's horrible.
It was uncomfortable for me. Mm-hmm. Like, as much, and again, I think you were supposed to empathize because, again, I don't think that Theodore wanted this. He didn't need this. And he was doing it because Samantha had said, look, this is important for me. But, you know, it's weird. Like, there's probably somebody out there who wouldn't mind being strangled by a dead cat. And there's probably somebody out there who doesn't want to be. Hey, I'm just like, you know, that line came out of nowhere and I was laughing hysterically at it. I wasn't so much uncomfortable, but it was just funny to me. Mm-hmm. But when the surrogate came in and there was the whole thing, like, he answers, oh, hi, how you doing? And she's like. Yeah. She just gives him the things, and yeah, it was just an odd thing. And it
then
just
goes, her desperation is like, oh my God,
right?
This is,
you decided
you actually chose this. This is what you
want to
do.
This is how you want to spend your time.
Interesting. And that's where I went into the dystopia again. I'm like, oh my God, how desperate are everybody in this world?
Yeah, because the surrogate wanted. She saw the relationship between the OS and Theodore, and she wanted to be a part of that. Right. And that was her reason to connect and try to. Handle with her real
emotions. To try to be in some way be connected to somebody else's connection.
To somebody else.
Because it's a failure in the society of what's happening.
It's like, man, that's just
it's crazy.
Dark.
It's crazy. But the good news with all these, like, it's funny because it is one of those movies as you reflect back, you see a lot of dark moments. But going through, you do get a lot of comedy. And that's one of the things that really I'm going like, a couple of their small additions, like the video game. I know so many people have been talking about Spike Jonze's video game, and that character was actually played by his voice, for you guys who don't know. And I was dying. I thought that was the funniest little alien Martian creature. He's mentioned making it into a full video game, and I need this to happen. I don't play video games, but I still just want this to exist. John's like, no.
I was just... you know, if that was plucked out of the movie, I would have been fine. I didn't hate it. I just went, whatever.
To me, it reminded, I should know this because I'm Greek, but isn't it Sisyphus?
Yes.
Rolled
it up the hill?
That's what that game reminded me of. He was going up the hill. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like an endless hill, and he's trying to get something up the hill, or only if he made it to the other side. Like, he never made it home, to my knowledge. Like, he never made it home, and then he had this little thing insulting him. And
that's the thing. It just reflected another. I said, wait a minute. So you're going to continually play a game where somebody's just insulting you. That's how low you are. Right? Your self-esteem sucks so badly.
But I like that one. I think it did prove a couple of functions, though. It, like, was showing technology. And then you get the relationship between Samantha and little and you get this like multi like friendship on all these like different platforms going on. So I really enjoyed it just because I thought it like integrated the technology and his life very well, and also gave you another like step forward in character and the difference between the heightened relationship that he has with Samantha and this just like little almost like teasing friendship that he has with his video game. So I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was so funny that I'm so glad it was in there.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I just to me it was like that. It was the endless journey because he wasn't going anywhere. And you know, you look at the and it, we'll go back to technology. When you look at technology today and you look at gaming, when you look at a system like the Xbox One, I'm not plugging it, I'm just using it as a reference, because that whole system is meant to literally take over your living room. It is, you plug in your media system, it's voice activated, it is meant to not just play games, but you can go Xbox on, channel 13, and it'll turn your TV on. And then if you want to play a game while still watching TV, you can do that as well. You can turn on your stereo, whatever. I mean, it literally, in a sense, is that step where it is an all-media device, which is controlling your entertainment media system. You can turn a computer on, and I find that very fascinating as well when we talk about today's technology. Mm-hmm. And the game, he's still playing video games 40, 50 years into the future. The graphics don't seem that great, though.
that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I should have got a surprise for that one.
Yeah, the graphics should have been better.
It's old
school. You know,
retro.
And we talked about, you know, we hinted on the end, and to me, again, I'm just going from the relationship standpoint of things. When you are looking for that spark, because you're almost desperate. If you're alone and you're sad and you're mm-hmm. desperate for something, so it made sense to go to the OS, as it seemed to for everybody else.
Sure.
But at the end, like, you saw that he and Amy Adams were highly compatible. And it was even mentioned that, like, well, how come you didn't go out with her? And he goes, we tried, but it just never worked out. And you sort of kind of figure out, why didn't that work out?
Because they don't know how to connect.
Exactly. But it took the
an
OS's,
intermediary.
Exactly.
Technology to get to me. You had to break up a technology in order to hook up.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's the thing.
But it was nice. I mean, at least it happened.
Yeah.
And now they have each other, and it's like the next step in a relationship that they really could be fulfilling. And I took the ending to be positive. I liked it a lot. Thought it was sweet.
I agree. And I think that a lot of that comes from the character that Amy Adams also portrays through the whole film. She's very consistent. She's very real. She has this funny kind of, we're getting us down a little bit, please. but I think we're supposed to move to production. Do I want me to stop talking about Amy Adams then, Phil? Is that what you're telling me to do?
Thank you for making every note so evident.
Your problem. No.
It's a nice segue. You're talking about Amy Adams, mm-hmm. and I do want to kind of move into the actual topic, you know, of actors and production and things like that. But so, you know, in speaking about Amy Adams, why don't we talk about Amy Adams and the actors?
I mean, obviously the whole thing is basically Joaquin Phoenix, but I think that the supporting actors did a fantastic job. I almost think Amy Adams did better in this movie than American Hustle. But that's just because I really recognized her character, and I had friends who recognized her character. We just felt that she was very real and true and just easy to like and easy to watch, and nothing felt forced or over the top.
Yeah, I felt horrible for her, but that her husband was...
It was just a nice person.
Yeah,
you wanted to be friends with her, and you wanted her relationships to work.
And that whole line, but you wanted her to find joy.
Exactly.
The thing about her character is that she was one of the few people in the movie that actually still had that human connection with someone else, with another human being. And then we saw the slow disintegration of that human connection that we all want and that all humans want. And she could have been the female counterpart, the starting point of a crazy OS, another OS relationship going on. But it was just that slow build of like how it actually starts breaking apart, how humans start disconnecting from each other, and that like her husband and her they had a fight over shoes for just like the trivial arguments
that
break things up.
But even that her character like spent her documentary time on watching someone sleep.
Yeah.
It's such like a basic human thing.
Yeah.
It's
great character.
It's so sweet, and you think that like this is one of the one characters that really does seem connected to or wants to be connected to the people
and then
around her.
What's the last thing she's trying to? The program is what, to find the perfect man or something like that. What was the thing that she was doing at the end?
Oh, are you talking about her mom game?
Is that what it is?
Was it?
It was
super mom.
Yeah, to be the perfect mom.
Yeah,
I thought that was just interesting.
It's just like these layers of like human connection somewhere in her work or what she's doing, and so I really enjoyed her.
They're all trying to have that, but they're not actually actively pursuing it.
Yeah, no. I give Amy Adams credit because I do think that we talked about it. I mean, I think her performance in American Hustle is standout. I thought she was fantastic. But to be in two movies within 1 year where your characters are so different, you know,
Man of Steel.
Three. Oh, my God. That's right. Lois Lane. Thank you. Yeah. And very different again from being Lois Lane to this character who is frumpy, not so much in the makeup. It wasn't about the glam.
Or the cleavage.
Or the cleavage. And, you know, I found her performance so, like, it was just sweetly nuanced. Like, she was human. And again, it was, Jesus, like, how come Theodore and she, Amy, I believe was her character's name too. Yeah. How come, Theodore and Amy should be together. They make sense. Like, they, you know, they could be a good couple together. They can finish each other's sentences almost. And, you know, I liked her element and what she brought to it. And it was sort of, again, it was sort of weird to me when she said, oh, he left his OS behind. And I just find it funny that it was the husband's OS that she became very good friends with.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Right. So, yeah, I thought Amy Adams' performance was really good. And, you know, if we're going to segue into, say, Joaquin Phoenix, I mean, for me, this is the performance, my favorite performance of his in his career. I thought he was fantastic. I thought he showed a different side. I've never seen a sympathetic Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, he was able to pull it off. He wouldn't be my first choice for this movie if I were casting.
I think there are very few people who would pick him as the first choice.
Yeah.
Except maybe Sarah.
Well, I love him. Yeah. I love him. So obviously I was really excited, but I can't disagree with you. Like, it was such a different side of him. And I think I've always appreciated him as an actor and thought that he really just fully commits and takes on these characters that sometimes you hate, sometimes you love, that have all these different levels. And this was such a sweet, soft side of him, because so many other ones, they are very deep people, and a lot of them have issues, whether it be in Walk the Line or in Gladiator. Like, these people do have, are messed up on some level. But in this one, it's
he's messed up.
It's like a sweet vulnerability, and there's a warmth to him. And I thought that was fantastic. And I just thought, for all the close-ups you have on his face and just all these reaction shots that you have to capture, and that he is developing this relationship that I believe with a voice, I think that's, it was really impressive. And so,
absolutely. I mean, again, I saw a side to Joaquin Phoenix that I'd never seen, and that's why I appreciated this performance of his. And I do feel, like, just in my opinion, I think it's the best in his career, because I saw something different out of him, and I would never have expected
he broke his type.
He did, and very believable. Very believable.
And I got to give it to Joaquin. He's acting on a one-sided kind of acting. He's not communicating with someone else in the room. It's really his sole performance by himself, and which I have to give it to him, because he's reacting to someone who's not there physically. And I've never really seen that from any other actors who really have to emote and really have all those normal behaviors.
Except if someone else was in the room.
Yeah. I do think that we recognize it more, though, because we know he's communicating with a voice, and we know the details that the original Samantha was, like, kept in almost basically like a studio box and confined from him. But you just have to say, like, with what a lot of people don't realize is when people film, you think that they're having a scene with another person, but oftentimes the other person isn't there anyway. Yeah. So people, you have to do this on a large scale for basically a whole movie.
But the actors do have to do this normally. You would have the two there doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Not always, but the fact that he had to do it the entire movie. That's pretty impressive, because let's face it, he kept his concentration.
Absolutely.
What we saw, I mean, we didn't see the dailies or anything like that, but what's up there is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't cut a lot of times. I mean, it's very seldom.
They got nothing to cut too.
Well, it's true, but I mean, you could see those times, like, they'll cut from a medium shot to a close up of his and different angle and whatnot. But so there are those times when you're like, okay, I know why you cut.
Yeah.
But there's moments when he's lying in bed where it's just him for, you know, even let's say a minute and 30. Yeah. So, really great performance.
Yeah, and he had to, because this is pretty much a talkie-talkie movie. I mean, this is just a lot of VO. So, and we're just on him.
Yeah, and I would say that's how the soundtrack sets it up. It has to be just like a slow talking movie. But on top of that, with focus on voice work, I think we should kind of talk about Scarlett Johansson.
Amazing.
She came in, stepped into this cast, and I think I was reading an article, I don't remember who it was by, but basically they were talking about the work she had to put in and what Spike wanted from her, because he really wanted her voice work to reflect the growth of Samantha. Yeah. And it just started out as a voice of someone who doesn't have pain or worries or anything and is very happy-lucky, and then develops emotions and develops a conscience, and he wanted that to be reflected in her voice.
That's all he can reflect it in.
Exactly. And I just think that sitting alone in a box trying to imagine your life and develop a whole personality within weeks, it's something that humans not supposed to be able to do, which is one of the points in this movie, is that only a computer could do this
that quickly,
and then she has to
and then she has to go beyond that, beyond what a human can do.
Well, you know, I mean, the whole genesis of that, the whole voice thing, because you know, it's widely known and out there. I mean, Samantha Morton was the original
fabulous
voice.
Actress in her own right,
great actress in her own right, and she too has a lovely voice. You know, and again, I think what I appreciate too about behind the scenes in this movie is that she was the one who was in the studio box feeding Joaquin the lines, and
on set,
and
basically a padded room,
of course. And it wasn't until putting the movie together that it was Spike Jones was like, not what I'm exactly looking for. And you know, he had a conversation with Samantha Morton, and they were able to go to Scarlett Johansson with her blessing. But what I really appreciate
Samantha's
about,
blessing to go to somebody
thank you. but what I guess I appreciate, because in all the interviews that Spike Jonze has had, this always comes up, because I think maybe people are looking for a nugget of, oh, I had to fire her because she was awful, but it's the other thing. He says, no, what she provided for the movie, like, Joaquin wouldn't have been
Joaquin. He
wouldn't
have given the performance he gave without Samantha.
And I appreciate that. She made this a big movie. What Scarlett Johansson brings to the movie is something big as well, and it's just different from Samantha. So there's no.
And the other thing is, he might not have recognized that without the performance that he got. He might have gave different direction to Samantha until he realized, you know, afterward that, you know what? I missed something here. We need it this way. It's already over, so you gotta go. Anyway.
But
in this sense, he was very lucky that Samantha was just a voice.
Yeah.
Because if this was
much easier to deal with
an actor with a face, we would have had some
and he mentions
longer
that too.
Delay.
And Spike Jones says that he loved the texture of Scarlett Johansson's voice, how it was soft and calming and soothing in that way. So that also added to Samantha's personality as an OS system.
Yeah.
Building that conscious.
Yeah, and you brought up a point about Scarlett Johansson and how she developed, her voice developed as the movie went along. For me, and again, within the science fiction world, you know, you're dealing with an OS that becomes it's an artificial intelligence. And what one of the main things about artificial intelligence is becoming self-aware. And for me, I was wondering, okay, how long is it going to take for the operating system or Samantha to become self-aware? And in the movie, it actually happens pretty soon.
Quickly,
and to be self-aware, that's using things like I feel and I am and things like that. And it
being
happened,
aware of how you're growing. And all
right.
That stuff, so.
And so, you know, and again, when you're talking, when we're talking about technology and artificial intelligence and what Scarlett Johansson brought to that, there was the growth. There was the wonder of it all, about having the sensation, about feeling it. But things for me got scary again when they were had that trip to Catalina, because it was there that she says, you know, I used to want to be in a human body, but you guys are so tiny, you know, and all I'm thinking of, I can squish you like a gnat if I wanted to, because she was like saying, I can be everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't die.
And I don't die. And I don't need to be constricted. And I love that. And even like his boss is like going, whoa, that's sort of kind of creepy. And she's like, oh, I didn't mean it that way. And you're like going, yes, you did. Like, to me, that's, you piss off the OS. Like, to me, it was a scary part, because she literally is saying, you people are tiny. And I'm already so much better than you, and I'm growing. And again, the movie could have gone that direction. It didn't. It stayed within its warm feelings, but that was a scary moment for me.
Yeah, that's true. And also, there were lines throughout the movie that Samantha's asking and being more empathetic with theater, and I think one of the particular lines, like, what's it like to be in that room? Like, everything you're thinking, she wants to know how he's feeling so she can reflect it upon herself and building that personality within her. So I thought that was just the another way that her character grew.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And just grew beyond humans. That's what I think is just, what? You know, only humans would make something that would grow beyond you because it evolves, but we don't.
Yeah, it's like Battlestar Galactica, Terminator. Exactly. I mean, look what happens.
It's Frankenstein all over.
Yeah, and what if he was like, what if, you know, I'm so glad it was Theodore and not like a serial killer. Because, you know, then we're in trouble.
Yeah. And also, like, I love the symbolism of the OS. It was literally a helix DNA strand. It's life.
Yep.
And just that in and of itself, you can tell where that character was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of thought and design and the creation of this. I mean, that's one of the things it's nominated for, I believe.
Production design. Absolutely.
Let's talk about production design.
And, I mean, for me, I think a lot of the buzz has been about the costumes. In particular, there has been so much said about the high-waisted pants. It's a never-ending topic.
They dress like my grandfather did.
Basically, I mean, as a girl, high-waisted pants have been in already for a couple seasons now. So we're used to it. Just hasn't really reached the male market.
It's making
it back, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. Like empire waist high-waisted. Oh, okay. Like, they've been around.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, from the high-waisted pants to the lack of ties, to the lack of suits, to this more casual, warm-feeling wardrobe, which is so contrary to what we normally see in futuristic things where we normally see, like, leather and pleather and...
It's more stark, too, usually.
Yes. And, like, this was a very... Almost in my opinion, good. It was like an indie. It was like an indie future.
Yeah.
Indie vibes.
But I still think they were dressed better. Like, they weren't like, people were walking around with their flip flops. They weren't like, you know, there weren't ripped jeans.
Jeans were pretty much eliminated.
There was a cleanliness, not septic cleanliness, but I think warmth. Warmth is the best way to describe it.
Well, that also goes with the cinematography because the lighting was always warm.
Yeah, and everything from the color palettes that they choose to his shirt, the red shirt that's on the poster. You know, there was a warm feeling to the entire movie, which I think really set the tone. There was nothing...
Don't you think you had to? Because a lot of it was kind of sad, and it was all melancholy all over the place. So don't you have to do something to kind of, otherwise
cushion,
it gets too depressing.
Cushion everything.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't like...
Phil, you were saying something?
Nope.
Oh, okay. But
no.
It wasn't bluesy. It wasn't... I don't think... Did it rain at all?
I don't think so.
I don't recall it raining. And it's it's a carless Los Angeles. Yeah. Didn't see any
which
cars.
Which supposedly was a choice because cars are one of the biggest things that give away a time period, and they didn't want to even... Mm-hmm. You know, touch
hint at
that
yeah.
which I think was a good choice, and it definitely helped in my opinion. I think it's a very true thing to keep it in the walking realm,
except for the fact that you have a subway going all the way to the beach in LA, so that, you know, that's at least 50 years in the future.
It's an LA that I would, it's the metro being built.
But that's why it's going to be 50 years in the future.
It's an LA that I wouldn't have minded living in, you know. It definitely is not. Well, gangs seem to have gone away. The thuggery seems to, you know.
Well, they just brought in some buildings from Shanghai. It's all good.
But it looks good.
That was the one thing where when they would finally show those landscapes or whatever, the buildings or skyline, I went, how the hell do you get to Shanghai? Because I recognized the buildings that haven't been there, luckily enough.
It's amazing what you can do with technology, isn't it?
I did. And then I went, wait a minute. How did we get to Shanghai? And it took me out of the movie the first time because I'm like, how did he get to Shanghai? When did he go to Shanghai? Why did he go to Shanghai?
When they filmed there for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then it took me a sec to realize, oh, okay, I see. Okay, that's what he's doing. But I was like, why? That was confusing to me because why pick such iconic buildings that I know are in another place and put them here?
Yeah,
and that was a little strange to me.
Interesting. Versus just creating new buildings.
Yeah, or alter them enough. Maybe they did alter
them. Because we're all connected no matter where. You could be in LA and everywhere else at the same time.
But for the same reason why you wouldn't do the cars, I would think, why would you do that? Because it just seemed a little strange to me.
Actually, I guess I'm not as familiar with Shanghai, so like this didn't pull me out.
Yeah.
But it's like the same as like I'm from... I'm from LA.
Right.
And so whenever a movie's not supposed to be set in LA and I start seeing LA landscape, I'm like, that's not Chicago.
And don't get me wrong, I thought it was cool.
I'm like, that's down the street.
Exactly. But I loved the way it looked. I thought it was great.
Me too.
I liked that they did it. It was going, every time they did it, I go, how did we get to Shanghai? Why are we in Shanghai?
And here's where
I love the color palette.
Yeah,
yes.
Because it wasn't hard on the eyes and it was easy to look and the audience can watch it for as long as this 2-hour movie was. And, and I loved how it wasn't just his red shirts that he was wearing. It was some other random objects too. It was like lampshades, pillows, shirts. The computer screen was also red. So just like the same colors used in different things throughout. Right. Mm-hmm. And it also reflected on theaters character as well. When he was sad, he was wearing like browns and reds and stuff. But then when he was happy, there was that one scene when he was at the party, he was wearing that bright yellow.
Yeah.
And so just the warm colors, it reflected just his mood as well.
Yeah. And here's where I would say that it didn't showcase a dystopian future. And I think and I think that we're sort of programmed for science fiction, for movies of the future, to be in a dystopian future.
Yeah, there's so much of it.
There's so much of it. Yeah. I actually, for me, this is where Her was a breath of fresh air, because it didn't. It showed a society that, like, again, it had that warm feeling. It was I'd love to live in that LA. I mean, it looked bright. The vistas were beautiful.
And the skyline was gorgeous. But it also reflected it was all form, no substance.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
The fact that you can't connect with another human being and you have to hire somebody else at some, whatever letters.com,
but
there's not a lot of depth there.
But again, where I'll say that, there has to be, maybe we didn't see it in the movie, but I was believing that there were other people who had relationships. Case in point, his boss met that woman that they went away with. Mm-hmm. Like, that seemed to be a firmly rooted relationship that was going places. You talk about the skyline and everything. To me, Michael Mann, nobody has filmed Los Angeles at night better than Michael Mann. And then there were some nighttime shots of Los Angeles that reminded me. I said, wow, did he hire Michael Mann to come in? Because the color that they used and what the cinematographer, like how he shot this movie, I thought, again, it really lent to the warmth and the connectivity. For an audience, it helped an audience, I think, connect to this movie. Mm-hmm. Whatever color palettes they used and the costuming and the production design, it looked interesting. There was nothing about it that was stark and made me go. I know you said the Shanghai buildings, but had I not known that, there was nothing that made me go, where it took
and
me out.
And it's interesting because it's such a clean line society.
Yeah.
Especially, and like that is a common thread that we see in a lot of sci-fi movies. It's this presence of the clean lines.
Yeah.
And that often reads as hard. It just does. And so the fact that they use these low lighting and these colors to soften that appeal. And so you're not walking away thinking that this is some hard society, but you do get that it's clean. Yeah, right. You do get it that it's futuristic, and you do get that it can be warm. That's a very
just because there's a lack of contrast and without the blues and the grays and everything like that, it's much easier.
But as Dimitri mentioned, were there blues, Dimitri?
Oh, there was.
Well, there were. But I'll only say this because I had read that before that the cinematographer that they made the conscious decision to try to stay away from blues. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and I read why, and it's they didn't want it to have that science fiction blue. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I really can't wait to see that not be in the movie. And
also leans to the authoritative, the blue and stuff like that. So if you take that away, then you are left with more of lack of a better term, emotional side of things.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But there was blue like almost everywhere.
Background actors, eye colors. I mean,
it's not like you can avoid them or anything. Yeah. But they did to a great extent.
Yeah, I think the most part we saw blues were at night when he's sleeping in bed and then the
video
skyline
game.
Behind. The video game.
But at work.
But it was just like environmental things. Yeah. It wasn't like blue objects or anything.
Maybe
like
just
that.
Talking about blue light, trying to
blue light,
so.
We don't know.
We'll have to dissect it again.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, as I remember, well, my memory of it, I should say, I don't remember a lot of blue light. I do remember a lot of reds and ambers.
I remember a lot of, I remember a lot of kids stuff, right? For some of the transitions, like for example, when he was going to work, they had the little, almost like a solar system, but kid like made with, you know, cubes and whatnot. And then immediately you cut to a drawing, of a guy sleeping. You know, so it all seemed very childlike, much like them, the characters.
Yeah. And, you know, in actually, since we've talked about the cinematographer, we should give him a name because he has one. Hoyt Van Hoytema. I hope I'm pronouncing it. It's H-O-Y-T-E-M-A.
Swedish.
Swedish. Right. And he actually was the DP on one of my favorite vampire movies called Let the Right One In. And again, if you ever, it took, it was filmed in Sweden, dead of winter, but the way he filmed it too, it had that soft, you know, he gave it a character. He gave the movie a character very much like he gave her a character. And I understand he's working right now with Christopher Nolan on Interstellar. So, you know, Christopher Nolan is a great visual director. And I can only imagine that, that Hoyt is going to give this a character and that it'll have, that it'll look fantastic.
They did a really great team on this.
They really did.
Really put together. I mean, along with production design, they've also gotten a lot of credit for their music, original score nomination, as well as original song.
Yeah.
Best original song. And I think that was really, they brought in Arcade Fire in particular to play, which is obviously a huge band and I think kind of funny to bring in for a whole new movie. But I think that the, I listened to the score this morning. It's available online. You can just like Google basically. It's not available to buy.
It's not available to buy.
But it's available to listen to. And so I was re-listening to it this morning, and it's a very graceful soundtrack. There's a lot of piano, and then there's the undertones.
Yeah, thank you, Phil.
Thank you. And then often a lot of songs
minor chords.
You get, yeah, you get, but on sometimes you'll get these like what they describe as like haunting sounds in the background, underlaying this beautiful like piano music that is light and airy and graceful. And as I was listening it to this morning, it was just like it reiterated to me like how much this was a like talking film. Because all this wanted to make me do is like think, be introspective, think about memories, talk to people. I remember I was in my bathroom and like I didn't want to close anything. Like I didn't want anything to be loud. Like this music just, you don't want anything being rushed. You don't want anything being slammed. It's very happy. It's very thoughtful.
And I got lonely out of it.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of chords and there were all these single note things and I was just, that's where I went with it. I was like, God, this feels lonely and sad.
Yeah. And after listening to it, there wasn't, for me, like I wasn't going to rush out and buy the soundtrack. Like this to me is, like you said, it's background. It's almost like spa music almost, or it's like,
yeah, I was
going
to say meditation.
Maybe because I like yoga and used to work in a spa. And, so I'm like, this is nice.
It's very calming. And it's very it's anti-Arcade Fire. I mean, if I'm looking, this isn't like Where the Wild Things Are. This isn't like the typical Arcade Fire type of music that I would associate with this. But, you know, the Karen O song I like.
The
you
Moon
know?
Song.
Yeah, the Moon song. That's and that like too is online. But I don't know. For me, the score didn't, it only stuck out to me in the certain scenes or when she was composing something for him and playing. That was great too. Oh, I learned how to play the piano and I wrote this song for you. And, you know, and I like those scenes. They enhanced the scenes that it was in. But when I left the theater, there was nothing that said to me, well, I was actually sort of surprised that it got.
See, and different. I guess I would just, disagree because I like to just enjoy and listen to this type of music like while I read or while I do yoga or things like that. And to me, it is a very thought-provoking type of sound. And it does create this like graceful peacefulness. But so I really enjoyed that. And I thought that really supported the movie because this wasn't a high-action, high-paced movie. You needed something that was mellow and had this emotion to it. And if you're getting loneliness from it, that's, I mean, he's a lonely guy.
That's why I think it absolutely worked.
And if you see like the lovely tones, that's her, so I think that works.
Absolutely.
So I was really happy with it. I don't know if we're going to end up talking about awards, so maybe I should.
Yeah, we are.
All right, I'll hold off.
We can go there right now. I mean, unless anybody wants to say anything about music, Marissa.
No, you covered everything.
Okay, yeah. Let's go right there.
It's like, I do hope that, for this movie in general, like my main gunning for it. I really, really want her to win a Best Original Screenplay. I think that it stepped outside the box. I think that it brought us something so, totally new. But while he brought this idea 10 years ago, it's now at the same time where, like, technology is, and it's doing all these layers of, like, social commentary. And it's fascinating, but it's still a love story. So I really think it should win for that. For the music, I love the music, as I just said. I think that it has a chance with original song, but I will have to give score to Gravity still. Mm-hmm. I think sound made Gravity as a film, so
yeah, I agree.
I'm going to still give that one to there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I stand. It also, I think it's up for Best Picture.
Best Picture.
Yes.
I can't give it that. I really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. It did stick with me. I just don't think it's going to win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I wouldn't be unhappy if I was wrong.
I think it'd be great for it to win Best Original Screenplay because so many movies that came out in 2013 were adaptations of stories that have already been done, like people's lives or autobiographies and or, you know, books or adaptations in that way. But so as originality, I think it hit a lot of key points that happened in real life, and a lot of people can connect to this movie in a way. And I think as original story, it's definitely really out there, and people have thought about it. And then Spike Jonze has really literally put it on screen to show that. And I think he did a really great job.
I'm not surprised that it's nominated for Best Original Screenplay. It wouldn't, again, to me, it's not, as I said earlier, the concept of this has been through science fiction, you know, for a very long time. Although I appreciated its take on it. And I appreciated with Spike Jonze. I think Spike Jonze delivered us a very original movie this year. So that's why I'm not surprised. It deserves the nomination for Best Original Screenplay. I still stick with my, you know, I'm still sticking with Gravity and or American Hustle for this. But it deserves the nomination. And again, I think one of the reasons why I always picked Gravity is because it's original. Because it's something, it brought us something that we haven't seen before.
Oh, see, and I completely disagree.
Where is Gravity not original?
You're saying that this is a sci-fi movie where you've seen relationships between, like, artificial intelligent human. I've seen space movies with crashing, like, 50 billion times.
You've seen people stranded in space the way that Gravity portrayed it?
Apollo.
I mean, not portrayed it the same way. Like, yeah. Just like
no, but even Apollo 13, it wasn't portrayed this way.
To me, that's the same. To me, those space, it's a space movie. It's a great space movie. I'm not saying I don't like it, but it wasn't some crazy new world that I'd never seen before. I have seen space before, not in the way he did it.
Exactly, and that's what
but
I'm saying.
But I'm saying that I've never seen a artificial intelligent human relationship in the way Spike Jonze did it.
But to me,
they're both original, and I think that Spike did it more or better.
Yeah, but I had given you samples that were going as far back as the
60s.
Yeah,
but she's never seen them.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I'm just saying, like, and again, you know, let me finish, because what I think that both her and what a Gravity does and why I appreciate that they're nominated is because it should, I hope, perpetuate originality going forward. I want, like, you know, her, I want it to make more money. Right now, I think it's at 17 million or so estimated that it's done since its release in December. Gravity was huge. Yeah. Gravity was box office. And I want the Academy, I want people to vote for these movies because I want it perpetuated, because we're always hearing things about that's not original. That's not original. And when somebody gives us something original, it's either scoffed at or it doesn't make as much money as we want to. And that's one of my reasons for going to Gravity, because it did show us space in a way that we've never seen it before. It actually brought us into the action. Her is a story that cinematically, like this, you know, the way that it was portrayed, and we can talk about all the different genres and we're having this great discussion here about it. These are the things that I want the executives who make these decisions, this is what I want them to pour their attention to. I want not everything need be a franchise. I understand that they can bring in some money, but they too are a gamble if you're throwing a ton of money into them, like, say, Lone Ranger, right? Well, so I'm just saying that I like the originality, and this is why I do feel that it deserves that best original screenplay, and I want more people to see it so that if ever that conversation comes up, we can point to 2013 and say, you know, there were original movies. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Gravity, Her, American Hustle, the way that it was put together. Like, there were original movies. They weren't all just based off of books or an adaptation of a play. We have that within this entertainment business, and I just want it to perpetuate, because if that perpetuates and more people start thinking this way, then we get a better variety of movies, and it just, it helps our business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I agree with you. Yes, Her. I'm not saying that one is less or more original than the other. I love the originality aspect of this movie. Just because I work in this business and I love movies, I want them to grow, and I want them to be original and fun and entertaining for our audiences to go see. So,
all right. That, nice. Phil, what was your take on that? Do you think it's up for the awards?
I don't.
Up to win the awards is what I mean.
I think it's going to win some awards. Mm-hmm. I don't think the big one. I think original screenplay it could.
You agree with the nom?
I agree with the nom. It certainly I think it should have been nominated for everything that it was nominated. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it going to win everything? Absolutely not, unfortunately. I don't think. I think this is a very kind of art house film. You know, to be fair, you know, I do want to talk about Spike Jonze's legacy and things like that. But, you know, if you insert a little bit more comedy and things like that, I think it's almost interchangeable with Michelle Gondry.
Huh. Sure.
See? I'm glad you guys agree.
Yep.
And so, you know, I don't think it made the impact like the other movies have, you know, so we'll see about Best Picture, but at least original screenplay, I think it has a shot of winning.
I think it will win, to be honest with you. I think it's the only movie that people are really talking about in terms of the screenplay, that at least right now, that's the heat mm-hmm. is on that, because, for whatever reason, they think it's the most original.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
It came out more recent.
Yeah.
So that could be part of it.
And, you know, whatever he's won whatever. I can't mm-hmm. remember at the moment. I mean, you guys will probably pick those up before I get it out of my memory. But... I don't know that it's original. I mean, you could call it a boy meets girl story. And you could. I mean,
an unorthodox boy. Yeah,
absolutely.
Why not?
I just like his take on it. I thought it was great. It is probably the movie that stuck with me in terms of talking about it or thinking about it because of the questions it evokes, like what is the nature of love and what can you fall in love with something?
What makes someone human?
There, exactly. Yeah. Those kinds of questions, because it's dealing with those kinds of themes, mm-hmm. whereas Gravity isn't dealing with those kinds of themes. It's dealing with a different kind just different themes. But because these are the bigger questions it's putting forth, I don't think he's answering anything. He's just, you know, talking mm-hmm. about them. Mm-hmm. Which was the one thing that to me that's missing. I would have loved for more like what causes.
I guess that's such a philosophical thing though, because these are philosophical questions, and that's the point, is that you can talk about them for ages and still not reach an answer.
Exactly.
And it's like, you know, taking a philosophical class on it, you'll get like one question at the beginning of the semester and you'll still be talking it on the last day. Mm. And no one's ever given you a straightforward answer on what the truth is.
No.
And that's the point. So, I mean, I'm okay with the fact that we didn't get any solid answers.
Well, I wouldn't expect that we would have answers, but what I was saying is that it's that part of it's not original to me. It's like he's just posing questions like everybody else. It's not that anybody has the answers, but mm-hmm. for me, that part's unoriginal. It's like you're just posing the questions that everybody asks.
Mm-hmm.
But he's done it in an interesting way. So mm-hmm. I like the script. I like the movie. But, you know, when I look at it deeper, it feels a lot like Theodore's Letters. They have a wonderful sentiment, and it's nice and everything, but then when you look at them, there's not a lot of depth other than what's there presented to you, and that for me that was like
I'll take it again for really good science fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, you can debate science fiction, you can talk mm-hmm. about thematics, the themes of science fiction, you can relate them to history, mm-hmm. present day, way past history. You can relate them to romance like we did here. Now, you mentioned philosophy. Mm-hmm. What I thought was a really funny scene is when he's on the train and she goes, oh, by the way, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine. this philosopher. He died a little while ago, but a bunch of us OSs, we took his consciousness and we say hi. And he was a philosopher, and his quote, actually, which I don't know verbatim, but it mentions something about relationships and about everything ends. Which again was another harbinger as to where this particular relationship was going. But to your point, how you said about, you know, you take a philosophy class, I think that this movie had, you know, brought up that philosophy in a sense, because we're talking about it right now. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about, you know, the meaning of connectivity. And
that's why I think it succeeds. I think it really succeeds. Absolutely. Just, I don't think that's original, but I think it succeeds.
It succeeds. But other movies can try. And they, it either pounds you over the head with it, or it is so subtle that you have to guess on it. And this movie really was a great balance.
I so appreciate that it caused conversation and it made people stop and think, just talk and that kind of thing. And it created a conversation that wasn't in the movie because people weren't talking to each other. You know what I mean? So that I thought was amazing. But I guess in some weird, and this is about maybe only 2% of my enjoyment of the movie, is I wish it had furthered the conversation rather than just igniting a conversation, because that for me was the part I was hoping to do.
But we're furthering it right
here.
That's
what I'm saying. I think that's why it succeeded and how it succeeded.
And it's been fantastic. I mean, like, we even got Phil to drop off some awesome quotes.
Oh my God, Phil.
Right?
And you get the award.
Yeah. And I think that, I said this before, a really good movie. This is what this show's all about. Like, when you were able to talk about so many levels on this movie, like, dislike, or whatever, and this is where, to me, her succeeds big time.
And that's why I think that's why it will win best. I'm just saying that I think people will vote for that because it furthered that conversation or made people talk about it.
I want to talk about Spike Jonze. We've talked briefly, but I want to talk about, in terms of his legacy and his body of work, where this kind of leaves him and you know, where this movie stands in his current body of work. Obviously, we hope to see a lot more of his movies in the future, but...
Okay, what do you think, Phil?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, I would say this one's his best work yet, because it's taken kind of what he's done in the past and really honed it, and as you said, you know, he's been thinking about this concept for 10 years, and when you really get that chance and you're not... When you get to step back from everything, and yes, you know, it may just be an examination of where culture is headed, but he's able to do it in such a smart and brilliant way, whereas his other movies, you know, not saying they're rushed or they're not as perfect as they can be, let's say, but this one just feels a little bit more, you know, when that extra step.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of that credit goes to the editing of this movie. And how much material he had supplied to it, and then they were willing to cut out.
Down.
I mean, in 10 years, you create a lot of writing. And he talked about how Spike Jonze just created so much material for the background of this. For instance, on the flashbacks of Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney, of their relationship, a lot of those scenes were improv'd. But he had set up like over 20 scenes for them about little love moments from their marriage. And then just kind of given them the heart of that scene and then let them kind of improv it and then chose from there. But when you're given all that information and all that work, I think it makes it harder to edit down, but it also leaves you with normally some really, really good stuff and some really good choices. So I think it's just because over this time he created so much of this world that they got to have a very deep picture, and that's why I think.
Well, looking at his full resume now, I mean, obviously adaptations on there, Where the Wild Things Are, but there's actually tons of video documentary work.
Sure.
And more than I ever actually imagined, to be honest. And of course, he wasn't the director, but he's obviously worked with our Jackass boys. And so he quite an interesting, but you know, just in seeing the number of documentaries, I really understand why he's able to make this sort of movie the way he did, because he's been observing people for a long time, it seems.
Yeah, and a couple of things that he's a skateboarder too. I mean, you know, he was a skateboarder and stuff, but one thing that we didn't mention, this is his first feature that he also wrote and directed. I love adaptation. You know, being John Malkovich.
Exactly.
You know, fun movies to watch. Very quirky. There's something about a Spike Jonze movie that it's like, oh, if he's directing it, I'm gonna go see it. I'll give him leeway more so than maybe some other folk, but he always brings something interesting to the table. I wasn't a big fan of Where the Wild Things Are. It looked interesting. This, you know, as far as her goes, yeah, I think he was able to bring in his writing. He was able to hone things down. And when you talk about the editing, I mean, you know, he had a group of, you know, he had two editors on the film. Mm-hmm. But like so many other directors do, sometimes they'll hand it off to people for a fresh pair of eyes, mm-hmm. which I appreciate. Again, we've talked about this collaborative mm-hmm. effort, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that Steven Soderbergh, that he, mm-hmm. you know, and Soderbergh's like, sure, I'll do it. And within 24 hours, he went from 2 hours to an hour and a half. And, mm-hmm. you know, I appreciate that Spike Jonze understands that. And then he's confident enough to give it to his two other editors.
Or desperate enough.
Well, I say confident enough because he, to your point, there's a nugget and mm-hmm. he knows. And sometimes it's tough. Sometimes mm-hmm. we've talked about a movie can be over edited mm-hmm. or not edited enough.
And if you're writing for 11 years, you might be too close.
Right.
Yes. Especially if you've written and directed it. It's hard for you to see the forest for
the trees. And I never felt that the pacing of this movie, you know, if you want to talk about editing, I never felt that it overstayed its welcome. Mm-hmm. It was just a hair under 2 hours or so. And when it ended, I was happy. I got, like, I never was fidgety or like, come on, let's get this going. I thought the pacing of the movie was fine for this particular movie. So, you know, the editing or for Spike Jonze, you know, he had a great command of his team and he found the movie that he wanted to release. And maybe
I would have loved to have seen the 90-minute one, though.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I would have loved to have seen how Soderbergh put it together.
Same here.
It would have been fascinating.
What I liked about Spike Jonze is that from adaptation and being John Malkovich, he has the great ability to have that voyeuristic look at someone else's life and successfully portray it and visualize it on screen for the audience to watch. And then going from those two movies to her, and we can see theater's life and how he lives in the world of solitude and isolation, but bringing him out of that and then looking at his life in a different perspective. Yeah. And I think Spike Jonze did a really good job of that, and especially it goes with the writing and directing of just seeing someone's life in one way and then looking at it in a different way.
Yeah.
He does that really well.
He has a good perspective. And yes. I think as a writer, too, I think he has a very good perspective. You know, yes, a 10-year gestation period for everything mm-hmm. to come out where it is. But within that 10 years, as we discussed, technology grew mm-hmm. and his perspective grew. He matured. He too went through a divorce, I believe. So he knows mm-hmm. things about relationships. So I think maybe he doesn't say it, but from looking at it from the way we are, mm-hmm. perhaps it's his most personal movie.
Well, I don't know how it couldn't be. Yeah. But, I haven't seen all his other movies. I've only seen Being John Malkovich. So I can't really say where he fits in the rest of it, where her fits in.
You haven't seen Jackass?
Well, he didn't direct that, did he?
It
doesn't mean it's not his movie. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, he write that.
All right, well, I'm talking about the ones he directed. And I much prefer this one over Malkovich by, you know, exponentially, let's put it that way. Yeah. So I'm much more interested to see what else he has to say or what his next one will be, especially if he's writing it. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be much more interested than
I'm very curious. I'm so curious in what else he mm-hmm. has going on in his mind, because I feel like he just has such an interesting way of looking at these things and ideas mm-hmm. that people have. So I'll definitely watch whatever he comes out with. Until he creates the crazy ones, and then, but this is good.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's always interesting since he's made his mark and filming mm-hmm. music videos and whatnot. Mm-hmm. He takes a different look, you know, regardless of whether you love John Malkovich mm-hmm. or adaptation. It was an interesting, unique way of looking at a certain subject topic and whatnot.
Yeah,
and I'll always look forward to, like, you know, what Spike Jonze is attached to, You know, I wonder if he'll continue to write, or maybe he, you know, I hope he continues to write. He has a good introspection. He has
to
a
that
good,
point. I want, yeah. you know, with music, we see so much collaborating and, sure. With TV, obviously there's more collaboration, at least in the writer's room, but his career path is so similar to Michel Gondry's. And I feel they should collaborate on a film and co-direct. I think it would be genius.
Maybe you should set up that meeting, Phil.
I'm going to.
Okay.
Honestly, take a look at their resumes. Take a look at their body of works. They're not that far off. It's almost like brothers or something like that.
He also has the best of, I guess, maybe now three worlds because he's in movies. I mean, he was in Three Kings with David O. Russell. Yeah. He had that cameo in Wolf of Wall Street and stuff. I mean, the guy gets around, and he obviously has a passion for this business, and he enjoys being in front of the camera as he does behind the camera, and now he can write. I'm looking up Michel Gondry, unless you have her filmography up.
His filmography, but yes.
I'm sorry. Do you have the filmography up?
Be Kind, Rewind, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. He's done a lot of the Daft Punk music videos, which Spike Jonze also did.
Maybe they're Rolling Stones. That's what I know him from, the music videos.
Right.
So yeah, they're very much similar.
So I'm wondering why there hasn't been more. You're right, and there should be a. It would be a fun collaboration to see what they could come up with. I think visually, I mean, it's not unheard of that two people direct movies. Mm-hmm. What if two people just had a vision to write a movie together? And come up with something. Maybe they can come up with something that turns a genre on its heels.
I think they could.
Yeah.
But now, we have to get to the bean counting. At the end of the day, it's bean the movie counting. Business.
That's yes.
Right. It's show business. So how's the business doing?
Well, apparently, I don't have a broken down production number, but apparently, production in P&A is about $45 million. So that's not too shabby when you're talking about your prints in advertising or your hard drives in advertising.
And going to Shanghai.
And going to Shanghai for 2 weeks. So 45 isn't too shabby. Currently, its gross is around estimated it's done $17 million. Now, it was released on December 18th, so we're about a month into it.
Mm-hmm. But the December 18th release was limited, though, correct?
It was for Academy nominee. Yeah, but, you know, but that was its release. Yeah. So obviously, they wanted to slide in there and get some. Well, number one, they got great word of mouth.
Yeah.
They started winning awards right off the bat. New York Film Critics Awards. I mean, they were winning awards, and the movie hadn't even really been released. And I'm like, how is this? Is this movie so great? And that was intimidating me because sometimes there's overhype. Mm-hmm. We've all been a victim to overhype. Yeah. And you go see the movie, and you're like, really?
Well, I was fortunate enough to see it before any of that started happening because I saw it really early on. So I didn't know. I mean, I saw it so early. I didn't know they'd filmed in Shanghai until I saw it on the screen.
Well,
yeah, so.
Then I have to ask, you saw it so early on. Did you come out feeling like, and you found out about the awards after?
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your initial thought? Because I'm really curious. We can see this now through your eyes. If you saw it so early, did you come out thinking that, wow, this is something that I've never seen. This is amazing. Or were you surprised at the awards?
Wasn't surprised at the awards, but I don't think that was. I'm not surprised at the awards because I was thinking that based on the pool that's in its competition, it made sense. But I don't think that's a reflection of her so much as it's a reflection of the pool that's out there.
See, I saw it pretty early too, but I really did like it, and I think that was because I was so shocked because I saw trailers for her. Oh my gosh, probably 6 months ago. And I think I saw first original trailer. Yeah. And I just really wasn't thrilled by it. And then I saw it earlier and was so pleasantly surprised and happy and was like, I really thought the first trailer didn't do it justice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really hope this does well. I hope people get past this. And then the awards started coming out. And then I think they released a separate trailer. When I saw it again, I was like, okay, this fits the movie a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I remember just really feeling hopeful that people were going to go out and see it and make the efforts. But so I was more of, I guess, shocked when I first saw it because I was not expecting to like it because I had not heard about the awards. I didn't know any of that. So,
yeah, I mean, marketing for them, for Warner Brothers, that had to have been a tough task because, you know, again, I saw the movie just recently. Mm-hmm. And when I started hearing certain words, like production design, mm-hmm. okay, when I saw the trailer, I see nothing in the trailers that even suggested production. Yeah. And I'm like, production design? I mean, like, what? How can you nominate production design? Like, well, that's going overboard. And, you know, and I'd seen the trailers and... it was you said it's like an art house movie or Phil.
Phil said that.
I guess a lot of the times I saw the trailers, it was at the mm-hmm. Landmark Theater. Mm-hmm. So it was playing on a lot of what the Landmark will play, mm-hmm. Getting into. I like the trailers. Spike Jonze was what, if it was anybody other than Spike Jonze, I may have scoffed at it. I may have like pushed it off to the side. But I said, okay, this is an unorthodox relationship movie. Mm-hmm. Spike Jonze is doing it. It's got to be interesting in one way, shape, or form. Even with the hype that I had about whatever awards it had been winning from critics associations and what it was being nominated for, I was like, it didn't exceed the hype, but I was like, okay, mm-hmm. now I understand at least why. And I got no problem with, I have no problem with it. So, but from a marketing standpoint, what do you do? It's a hard concept. How do you get a mainstream audience or an older audience to try to say, he's having a relationship with a computer? Like, what is this? Like, why do I want to see this movie? You know, that's tough. Mm-hmm. And then when you do the anti 40-year-old virgin poster, and it's just his face, and he's not, right. Like,
he's a sad sack.
And it's not being billed as a comedy.
Yeah.
So... you know, I think they have, you know, Warner Brothers did, I think, the best that they could have. Mm-hmm. And I think with a $17 million, I don't know how it will do overseas. Mm-hmm. Could be tough. I don't know. We want people to go. I think right now, just ride that wave of the Academy.
Yeah, you have to.
I mean, you have to ride that wave.
I would market it like crazy off all the awards this one. That's it. Because just go see it. It's worth it. You know, you'll enjoy it.
Look at all these people who liked
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's what, you know.
And they made a new poster that actually has the color blue in it, but it's a poster that has him like walking, and it's got all the nominations.
It's clearly not an easy sell.
So it's not,
but it's a good movie.
It is, mm-hmm. but I think they're doing as best as they can with getting an audience to go mm-hmm. see this movie, because the people who are coming out, you know, are really liking it.
What I'm curious, does anybody know is how it's progressed? Meaning, it started out probably hit it. Okay, but then it started winning awards. It started doing better. Is it holding or is it going up?
I don't have the stats.
Does anybody have
that?
IMDb
is 8.5, and then
I meant in terms of how many people are going to see it.
Is it
increasing or is it holding?
Well, let's take a look.
Okay,
let's go to. Right now, I'm looking at boxoffice.com, mm-hmm. and when you are looking at grosses. Let's go back to December. So December, it did about December 18th, that opening weekend, about 58,000. Mm-hmm. All right. Currently, if we're looking at it week to week, let's go back recently. So we'll start off January 14th, 632. These are dailies. Let's go to the weekend. For January 17th, it did 1,158,000. So yeah, I mean it's building. I mean they're expanding their locations.
They got good timing.
Yeah. So I mean they're doing a decent job. Mm-hmm. It's worldwide gross, I should say, is worldwide gross right now is 17 million. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they've opened it up outside of the States, but 16.8. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, you're riding that Academy wave, mm-hmm. and you're trying to sell originality. Mm-hmm. You could get that. The more educated cinema crowd to go to the Landmarks, the Arc Lights, wherever it is playing, the, you know, Century Cities, to go see this movie. And, you know, but again,
it's doing Hurt Locker money.
Well, I think so.
Maybe
far,
it will win.
You know
what
I'm
saying? You never know.
I actually think it's already outgrossed Hurt Locker.
No, really? No. Hurt Locker did like 50 or something.
No.
No?
Hurt Locker is the, Hurt Locker
yeah,
is
I know,
the,
it's a,
the,
but yeah. I thought it was a 50. Anyway, regardless.
Yeah, we could look it up.
What are your last thoughts on marketing there, Phil?
Oh, that's where Dimitri's the king of that.
Yeah, well, let me ask you gave your impression of the marketing was this probably not something that I want to
see. At least the trailer. I'm fine with the poster. The poster's fine.
Did everybody see the trailer
at
a theater?
I knew so little about it when I went to see it because nobody had really seen it. So I just went in saying, okay. I'm neither a fan nor a hater of Spike or Joaquin. So it wasn't like I went in going, oh, it's Spike. I just went, okay, all right.
Had you seen the trailer beforehand?
No, I hadn't seen anything.
Saw the trailer probably back in the summer when they first released it. And I remember a movie, a man having a relationship with his iOS device, or, well, OS device in this case. But watching the movie after seeing the trailer for so long ago and watching it recently, I didn't realize how serious and how dramatic and how in-depth it actually went with it, and like how it really built a relationship. Right. So, yes, the trailer didn't really do it justice. It set up the plot point of what's going to happen, but I didn't realize it was going to be as serious and dramatic as it turned out to be.
Yeah. How about you, Phil? Had you seen, prior to seeing it, did the trailers grab you in any
way? The trailer was absolutely god-awful. Okay. No offense. It really was.
I didn't cut it.
Yep.
It was god-awful. There was nothing about this. I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, there's no way this movie is this bad. It's just really tough to, I get it.
It's really tough to make marketing. That's great. It can't be that bad. It's got to be good. Right. Okay.
No, I just knew the trailer was, there was no way that this trailer could have done a movie like this justice. I just knew that. I was excited to, not, I mean, I was, wanted to see it. To be honest, if you guys hadn't pushed me to see it, would I have seen it as soon as I did? Right. Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I did. It certainly was an enjoyable experience. At times, certainly nerve-wracking when you're sitting next to a bunch of people and you know, cuts to a black screen of people just, orgasming.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad. I haven't seen many posters for it, but I'm glad I did.
I mean, I've seen the marketing. I saw the trailers. To me, it was just Spike Jonze's name being attached to the movie. I was like, oh, okay, of course this is Spike Jonze. This looks interesting. I guess if his name wasn't attached to it, I might have thought the same way Phil did or you did, and I might not have given it some of the credit. I mean, the trailer didn't bother me as much. I just don't know how you market this. And I think when you're given a movie of this topic, I think that Warner Brothers,
we're having a hard time figuring out what do people think. It's sci-fi, rom-com, drama. I mean, I think that's one of its strengths, because I like that it crosses over all those things and it includes all those things. But it makes it hard to pigeonhole.
It's tough. And I think with that obstacle, I think Warner Brothers, you know, did as good a job as you can do.
You know how you do it?
How do you do it?
You get some guy writing individual handwritten letters to every person in the world. Go see this movie.
Okay, Phil.
That's a good promotional thing.
What? You don't think? Okay, had they done that in some sort of fashion, I think it would have been genius. The press behind just that alone, about the press, would have been phenomenal.
If that showed up in my mailbox, I would have been, what the hell is this? No, but I mean, listen, that's out of the box thinking.
But you do it from that letters.com place. What was it?
Letters.com.
Yeah, send a little handwritten note from Theodore to everybody see the movie.
It's just hard to market a movie that is about connection, finding oneself. It's almost like Walter Mitty is almost a hard movie to really market and get out there to say what it's about. But this movie, and it's nuts and bolts. It's about a guy who falls in love with his operating system.
Well, you saw that and you just went, well, yeah, right. I'm going to like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I think people went to the movies to see this movie because the realistic part that everyone knows what an OS device is now. So they're like, we want to see the possibility of this actually happening.
I think, like, I would agree that the reason they're really getting people is now not only because of Wars, and that's going to be the big push, but they had good names attached. The thing is, if you didn't have Joaquin Phoenix or Scarlett Johansson or Spike Jonze or any of those, or Rooney, like, I don't think it would have done as well.
If the movie wasn't getting good reviews, and if the movie was getting,
of course, that's like the main awards, thing. But I'm saying that underlying,
those people wouldn't have mattered. Spike Jonze wouldn't have mattered. Like they would have turned away in droves.
Well, okay. I'm glad it's gotten the attention that it has, and I'm glad that it's being recognized.
Sarah Starringham.
Was that
yours?
I really liked this film. I'm glad that it's being recognized. And then it's getting good reviews.
Okay. There we go. Oh, look at that.
I did enjoy this movie because it really did reflect the need for human interaction with each other and how vital it is to living and how to work with people, love people, and, you know, in your workplace and in your home. I love the human connection that everyone needs.
Human connection.
Way to go. Dimitri, last thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, this movie pleasantly took me by surprise. It was a very well done movie. It was very, I was surprised at the sentimentality. I bought into it. I understood it. I liked how it was about connection. I also liked it's what it said about technology. We opened it up with Spike Jonze saying technology connects us, yet at the same time, it disconnects us.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot today. So I really enjoyed it. One last thing when we talk about criticism. I mean, right on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at a 94%.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
That's pretty big. Yeah. And I think that helps perpetuate whatever its box office. But yeah, I'm
Phil,
a big fan.
Last thoughts.
Let's see. Last thoughts for me.
Don't drop another quote.
Give us. Oh, I was going to say, give us a quote. I want a quote.
I want.
I'll give you a poem later.
Okay.
No, I really enjoyed it. I liked it. To me, it was satirical, and I always enjoy that when we can poke fun of society, you know, in hopes that we can change because of it. And so I did enjoy it. Again, uncomfortable at times. Really great performances. As great as Joaquin Phoenix was, yeah. I do still give credit to all the other actors, you know, because in the times that they were on screen, they really had to shine because they had to take away from Joaquin in those moments because, you know, he couldn't solely just carry this entire movie, even though he practically did. And that's it. And I'm glad Anatomy of a Movie brings us together.
Oh,
the power of movies.
The connection.
We connect.
Wow. I don't know how we can say anything after that. But all I'll say is that it's a cautionary tale.
Sure.
Watching that for me. I thought it was a wonderful movie as a cautionary tale because I think you should go see it and then have a conversation.
And then reflect.
With
reflect.
And actually make a connection and, you know, not just about a
write
movie.
Your own letters, damn it.
That's what I mean. Write your own damn letters.
And we connected on this.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So you don't get, so you don't end up with, like, theater.
Because here, it's a slippery slope, you know. If I'm writing a letter, I'm like, oh, John's a better writer than me. John, help me. Just don't go there. Okay. Write a crap letter on your own.
It's intent. Yeah. Okay, well, that's it. I think that's all we have time for. We appreciate you tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Good show, everybody.
There we go.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.